If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Hey, Reggie, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, cool. Are you getting ready for the big holiday season here? We're right in the middle.
It's the holiday season. Yeah, so we're all set to go here, right? All right, well, then what do you say we do the podcast so we can get out and do our Christmas errands and shopping? I've already decorated my house about a month ago, November 12th. But anyway, so what do you say? You ready to go? Good. Put in the book. Number 446. And it's Star Smile Strong, and it's 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, especially during this holiday season, while you're sending out all your Christmas cards, also tell your friends and your family and everybody you send on your list that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Oh, sure, you could send them your season's greetings, but then also slip that in, too. Get out there. Send your season's greetings and send that message out that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be everybody on your lists as well. Make sure that they're being naughty and nice. That devotion and loyalty you show is always, always appreciated here, especially during this season of giving. If you like what you hear, don't forget, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and talk about the season of giving. This podcast is the podcast that keeps on giving. We've been giving you solid podcasting entertainment since 2016. So just get in there and load more and scroll down and listen to this one, number 446. So this podcast is called Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, right? Now, I hope that the cleverness and the subtlety and the many layers that that title has not been lost on you, both the longtime and the newer listener. Now, look, first of all, when I decided to do a podcast, I figured I should use my radio nickname, Elton Jim, since a lot of people know me by that. So I had to get Elton Jim in the title. Now, being an Elton John fan, as I've been since I've been 9 years old, and the fact that my nickname is Elton-related, to me, it only made sense that I should somehow get the name of the podcast involved in the Elton theme, but not overtly. Now, there are some people that have podcasts out there that are all about Elton John. And by, you know, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, people might think, well, that's just an Elton John podcast, just about Elton John's career. If you've listened at all, you know that that's not the case. I've certainly talked about Elton John every so often over the last, almost 9 years now, but not every week. It's not like every week it's an Elton John topic about this album or this news or this song or blah, 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 or this concert. I have shared Elton experiences that I've had over the last several years, as well as in my past, because I share everything with you, personally and professionally. And so, yeah, there's been times when Elton-related experiences have come up that I felt that those would be interesting to share with you. But this is not an Elton John-oriented podcast, like a true crime podcast or, you know, a podcast about a specific subject. This is just, once again, reflective of me. I'm Elton Jim, and I'm a big Elton John fan. So in a way, as I said, the title of it is not meant to be, well, this is an Elton John podcast. But I felt, since my nickname was already Elton Jim, that I should have a little Elton John theme. So in case you don't know this, I'm going to reveal the magic trick. I would hope you would have understood this, but maybe you don't. We'll see. But Captain Podtastic refers to an Elton John album, my favorite, by the way, called Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. So, in what I wanted to do was bring in an Elton John reference, bring in my favorite album to some extent, but also say something about the podcast. Now, the word fantastic is, hey, this is something great. This is something fantastic, right? At the time when this podcast started, podcasts were not like they are today. I mean, now everybody literally has a podcast. But like 2016, when I started this, not everyone had a podcast. So I wanted to put the word pod in there somehow to identify it to people as to what it was, because that term was just beginning now to really catch some steam. And, you know, what I wanted to do was to make sure that I could have this little kind of play on words. So, fantastic, in my view, describes the podcast in general, but then Captain Podtastic is a play on Captain Fantastic. But this podcast is podtastic. It's a fantastic podcast. So it's podtastic. And at the same time, it also plays into Captain Podtastic, which I could then be viewed as, I am Captain Podtastic. Like Elton John is Captain Fantastic, I am the captain of the podcasts. So do you get that? It works on many levels. I don't know if you've ever thought about it or cared about it, but I just wanted to let you know. The magic trick is up. But that's hopefully the many levels it works on. In fact, the logo for this is based on the Captain Podtastic. That font, that script, is similar to the font that's used on the cover of Captain Fantastic. So it all ties in. But the reason I say this is that while this is not a Elton John oriented podcast, there have been times when I do talk about Elton John. And this is going to be one of them, because I do think that it's worth mentioning. If you've listened to this, you know the importance that Elton John's music and Elton John as a person has played in my life. I've been a fan since I've been 9 years old. I've seen him in concert 215 times. I've traveled around the world to see him. I've met him a few times. You know, I mean, he's played a major role in my life. He has enriched my life. He has influenced my life. He has changed my life in many ways. I don't know if I'd be the same person had I not been a fan of Elton John's. He has influenced me in many, many ways. And in many ways, his life and his career have been intertwined with my own. My memories and my experiences in many ways have been intertwined with what he has done over the last 50-some years. I remember buying a certain album. I remember going to a certain concert. I remember seeing him on a certain television show. I remember being in my room listening to this certain album at a time. I remember going here. I remember going to the store and buying this magazine. I mean, I have personal, indelible memories that are tied to moments in Elton John's own life and career, some that I've actually shared with him at the same time. He might not have known it, but sometimes he has. He has recognized me from the stage and called my name out. It's been a very interesting, exciting, and very satisfying relationship, if you will. It's been an odd friendship in that we are not friends, and yet we are connected. And many fans of anything or anyone, if you're a diehard fan, you know what I'm talking about. And so that's why I like to share things about my life that are important to me. And so on occasion, I have talked about Elton John. And I think this is something that's worthy, if you're not just from my standpoint of it's something important to me, but I also think that if you're either an Elton John fan, even a major Elton John fan, or maybe just a casual Elton John fan, I think this is something that you would hopefully find interesting. There's a new film, new documentary, that is coming out this week. This podcast is posting on December 9th. On December 13th, Friday, on Disney Plus, there is a new documentary called Elton John, Never Too Late. And it was directed by R.J. Cutler, as well as Elton's husband, David Furnish. And the whole idea of this documentary initially was to show the preparations that led up to his farewell tour, and then also give some career-spanning information about his amazing career that from 1970, he's really literally been one of the biggest stars in the world. And his star, while he was enormously popular in the 70s, the fact is that for the most part, he has maintained a certain level of that fame throughout the last 50 years total. It really has been quite a career. He's branched out into musicals and films. He's a recent EGOT winner, meaning he has an Emmy and a Grammy and an Oscar and a Tony. He's a knight. I mean, there's not much more that this guy can achieve in his life. And here he is at 77 years old, and rightly so, as his manager as well, David Furnish, decided to make this film as a legacy-lasting, legacy-explaining project for both the diehards like myself, as well as maybe the casual fans like you, and for history and for posterity to understand the place that Elton John had in the music world as he came up, the enormity of his fame during his zenith, in his pinnacle in the mid-70s, and for decades to come to use as a informational as well as entertainment tool to say here was a very special performer, so generations to come can learn about him and come to appreciate him and maybe become diehard fans of his even years after he's gone. And on every level, this new documentary succeeds in that way. Now, as a longtime fan, as I said, who has shared many experiences, and when I watch something like this, I have direct memories of those times and those things. So this film has a deeper meaning for me. But as I said, even if you're a casual fan, I believe it is presented and produced, and the information is offered in such a way that even a casual fan will learn some things. And we'll have, I hope, a greater appreciation for his music and for who he was and what he has given this world as an entertainer, as a philanthropist, and as a person. It does an excellent job of showing Elton John both the public persona and at times the private persona. Even some just cherished moments of him FaceTiming with his two boys while he's on the road. A very, very special behind the scenes moments, as well as some, even in my experience, some archival footage that I've never seen. And it tells the story in a very unique way. It plays up this, not only his beginnings, how he met up with lyricist Bernie Taupin, and then how they literally had overnight success by playing the Troubadour in L.A. in August of 1970, and then really in 1972, with the release of Honky Chateau album, he started a string of seven consecutive number one albums from 1972 through 1975. Seven number one albums in a row. Quite a feat, as well as breaking all the Beatles and all the Elvis concert records and, just accolades everywhere. There was a statistic at one time that his popularity was so big that at one time the estimates were that he sold 2% of all the records sold in the world. Now you say, well, what's 2%? Well, 2% of every record sold in the world was an Elton John song, or an Elton John record. He has sold over 300 million records. I mean, you say, well, what's so big about that? Well, see how many Madonna or see how many Michael Jackson or Billy Joel have sold, and then compare that to Elton John's, and then you'll see. He's had an amazing career. And once again, I'm biased, but that's why I'm urging you to watch this on Disney Plus starting on December 13th, Elton John, Never Too Late, because I appreciate and I recognize what kind of career he's had. And it's had a different kind of impact for me, and that's fine. But I've always wanted the general public to have a full appreciation, because as big of a star as he has been, that he was and is at this point, the sad part is the true enormity of his accomplishment and his fame and the context of which it was achieved has never fully been explained and elevated to the degree that it should be. I mean, today's world, we talk about Taylor Swift and Beyonce, and we talk about Michael Jackson during the 80s with Thriller, and we talk about Madonna, and we talk about Britney Spears and some of the people over the last. I am not taking, and obviously the Beatles in the 60s and Elvis in the 50s, I'm not taking anything away from any of them. You cannot deny the fame and the achievement and the success of, for instance, Taylor Swift. It's impossible to do that. Elton himself has said, wow. But Elton also should say wow at himself. I'm not putting it down any of these people. But I can make an argument. And to some extent, this film does make it. I wish it went even further and made the argument and made the comparisons to show the enormity of his, because as comprehensive as this film is in terms of showing his career, especially in the 70s, in detailing some of these amazing feats and these highlights, it leaves a lot out. If you walk away from this film saying, wow, I didn't know that. That's quite a career. You know what? It was 10 times bigger than that. There's stuff that's not even in there that would even further elevate how big his career was. And it was done at a time when there wasn't MTV. There wasn't the internet. There wasn't Views. There wasn't Facebook. There wasn't Instagram. There wasn't TV shows they're promoting and the pop culture like there is today. When Elton was doing this in the mid-70s, there were still only three networks. Rock and roll was rarely on television. Many newspapers were just beginning to even get rock critics for the regular newspapers. The big ones had it, but many of them did not. The rock journalism was still trying to prove itself in the journalistic world that it was legitimate. Yes, there was Rolling Stone, and there were magazines like, you know, Crawdaddy and Cream that were all about rock, but they were still fringe. Rock music in the 70s was still considered by many a fad music. It was the young kids, because Sinatra and Dean Martin, those people were still around. And yet rock, Elton was able to, in a time, still have success that was unparalleled, even in by today's standards. Yes. When you look at what Taylor Swift, but I'll put Elton's numbers against anybody's, especially in the year 1975. He had so many accomplishments that if some people had one of them, one of the things he accomplished in 1975, they would be considered major stars and legends if they did one of these things. He did a litany of things in 1975. And without the help of an MTV or a media that was, yes, he was in, he, don't get me wrong, he was written about. But the serious music magazines like Rolling Stone at the time and stuff like that, they covered Elton because they had to. But they didn't fawn over him. They didn't elevate him. In fact, many of his albums were trashed. He was viewed as a pop star. He was viewed as, he wasn't socially relevant. And what really was going on was, in the 70s, that the rock press that was trying to legitimize, and the writers who were trying to legitimize themselves and their type of journalism within the journalism world, because it was relatively new. As I said, rock and roll music was not taken seriously, especially in the media. And so it was a tough sell for writers to get into the newspaper by the mainstream. Yes, there were these fringe magazines that talked to rock stars, but I'm talking about mainstream. And Elton broke through that. Elton was able to become the biggest rock and pop star in the world, not because he had MTV playing his videos 24 hours, not because he had Rolling Stone writing cover stories about how great he was, but because of radio airplay and record sales. It was the people. The people ordained and made Elton John as big as he was. Not the critics, not the press, not even the business. The people. They stood up and said, "We like this guy. We want to see him in concert." You know, he was diminished because all the glasses and the costumes, and it wasn't serious. And you know, the rock press wanted to be taken serious. When the Beatles broke up in 1970, they wanted to ordain the next big thing. You know, and it had to be someone like a Dylan or a Lennon or a Jagger or even a David Bowie, even though they tried hard to make a David Bowie, but David Bowie did not become the major mainstream star until 1982 with Let's Dance. But they were trying their darndest in the 70s. But Elton, despite not having that support system, had the support of the people. And he achieved amazing things because of the pure frenzy and dedication. Hey, that was me. I was 9 years old when I first bought my first Elton John record, and I've been a fan ever since. And I remember a lot of that stuff. I was there, as I said. Many of my memories are attached to his career. Some of my favorite memories. And when I was watching this film, I was watching some of the footage. Oh my gosh. I mean, I got chills. It was like, many times I was looking at a photo album of my own life, because I remembered those moments. But even if you're a casual fan, I would urge you to see this, because it really does tell the story in a caring, emotional, and powerful way. And it's a story that deserves to be told. People need to understand, because as I said, I mean, Elton John is 77, and while he is a fixture and people know him for The Lion King and, you know, Your Song and Crocodile Rock and Rocket Man and things like that, his career is so much more than that. And this film does a good job of showing that. But as I said, ironically, they even, in my view, it could have been 15 minutes longer and they could have even shown more and really hit that point home. I think after you watch this film, you can walk away saying, wow, wow, I didn't know that. And that was quite a career. You should have been able to. That, I think, will happen. But you should, your hair should be standing up. Like, wow, I had never known that. That's how big his career was. And so I would urge you to see this film because it has some great archival footage, some great highlights that you may be aware of, you may not. It will tug at your heartstrings, even if you're not a big fan. As I said, not only does it show him FaceTiming with his kids backstage while he's on the road somewhere and they're at home talking about just everyday things and just fathers and sons, but then also some amazing career highlights, especially a little extended segment on when John Lennon appeared on stage with Elton on Thanksgiving Day in 1974 at Madison Square Garden, which, unbeknownst to anyone, sadly, it would become his last concert appearance. Soon after that, John hooked up with Yoko, who attended that concert. John didn't know she was going to attend. They met backstage, and they sort of got back together. And John and Yoko then got pregnant. And with the birth of Sean in 1975, John basically dropped out of the music business for 5 years to raise Sean. And sadly, when he emerged again with a new album, 1980, just weeks after it was released, he was tragically assassinated. And so this appearance with Elton at Madison Square Garden in New York, sadly the same place where he was killed, in fact, not even that far away, 40-some blocks, almost straight down 40 blocks away, he was killed 6 years later. This turned out to be John's last concert performance. And the emotion and the ovation he got, he hadn't been on stage in many years since the Beatles. I mean, did a few charity things, but it had been a while. And it turned out to be a historic evening in many ways. In the moment, it was historic, and now it's taken on even bigger historic meaning since it was the last time that he appeared in concert before he was killed. Now, if he hadn't been killed, there were plans for him to start touring and everything. It still would, this event still would have had a historic significance, but now it is even more significant. And sadly, and I think inexcusably, while that appearance was just three songs with Elton during the show, it was recorded. There were photographers there, but inexcusably, and Elton's management at the time, if I had one question of them, I would ask, how could you not have hired a film crew to film this historic moment? Regardless, no one could have known what was going to happen to John 6 years later to make this even more sad and historic. But even for the moment of John Lennon coming back on a stage for many years in New York with Elton John, even for Elton's own archives, for even if you never even released it or whatever, to have this footage so Elton at this time in his life could go back and relive that again. And it doesn't exist. They didn't film it. There were photographers. They were recording it, but they didn't film it. There's some very rough, audience filmed with 16-millimeter cameras. And what a shame. This one moment in time that deserved to be captured for what it was at the time. And then what you would have had because of what happened historically then, just 6 years later, that film would have been invaluable, inexcusable. And sadly, it doesn't exist. But even the segment that is in this film with the still pictures and with the audio, it does a great job of highlighting both John Lennon as an artist and then the special relationship that Elton had with John for about 2 or 3 years in the early to mid 70s, culminating in this appearance. And Elton, of course, sang with John on one of his songs, the song that became number one, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which is why John appeared. When Elton was recording with John on his Walls and Bridges album, Elton said, I think this song is going to be a number one. And John said, no way. And Elton said, and maybe some of this might be, you know, revisionist history, but the story goes that Elton said, well, if it's number one, you have to appear in Madison Square Garden with me. And John figured, he was very stage, he had a lot of stage fright, and he figured, well, that'll never happen. Okay, sure. Well, it became number one, just for 1 week, but that was enough to fulfill Elton's bet. And John made good on that bet. And that is a very special part of this film. As is, as I said, other moments throughout Elton's career. And then as well as then the preparation for his final tour, which was cool for me because not only was I able to see some of this archival footage, which I remember seeing and actually experiencing some of the things. So it was very nostalgic for me. But then fast forward to today when they're showing different cities throughout this final tour leading up to his final U.S. tour appearance at Dodger Stadium in November of 2022. I was at many of those shows that are featured in the film. I was at those. And then, of course, I was at the final three shows, including November 20th, 2020, or 2022, at Dodger Stadium, which was Elton's last U.S. show of his Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour. So, yeah, for me, this it's a travel log in many ways, and it's a family album for me in many ways. But I think you'll get a great appreciation for Elton John the man, for Elton John the artist, and for the enormity of his success. And I have to say that even from a standpoint of being shocked. So, a little background on this. The film is, I've seen the film 2 times already on a big screen. While it debuts on December 13th on Disney Plus, Elton John Never Too Late, on the streaming service, it has been shown in movie theaters in select times and areas. I first saw it in October. It was shown before in October and September at some various film festivals, one in Toronto, one in New York, and one in London. And I saw it in October in London. And I wanted to see this on the big screen. I mean, you know, today we watch everything from our television at home, and it's certainly convenient. And I even said in the last podcast, I don't really go to films all that much anymore, the movie theater, because the experience has changed as people's behaviors have changed in the theater. But there are some things that I do want to see on a big screen. And this was one I definitely wanted to see on the big screen. So in October, I went to the New York Film Festival to see the premiere of Never Too Late on a movie theater big screen. And Elton and his husband and David Furnish, who's also the co-director on this, and RJ Cutler, the other co-director, appeared at the event as well, which is very cool. They were on the red carpet. They were doing interviews. And then, as a total surprise, which was not expected, when we walked into the movie theater, it was at Tooley Hall, I believe, which is near Lincoln Center on the Upper West Side. When you walked into the theater before the movie started, on the stage, because it's a theater that shows movies, but it also does performances, there was a black Yamaha grand piano. So we had a sense that something special was going to happen either before or after. Well, it was after The film was shown. David Furnish came out and introduced it. They showed the film. As I said, through it, I think it's an hour and 40-some minutes, I smiled, I nodded, I laughed, and yeah, I cried. And then I just got goosebumps, because then when the film was over, out walks Elton, and he sits behind this piano, and he played Tiny Dancer just by himself. Well, it was emotional, and it was a shock, because A, no one expected to see him play. We knew he was going to be at the thing, and maybe he would come out and say a few words, but nobody expected him to actually perform, even though it was just one song. It was emotional for me because I had not seen him perform live since his final show of the Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour in Stockholm, Sweden in July of 2023. So this was over a year and change that I hadn't seen him perform, and I'd been seeing him perform quite a bit over the last 20 years, and I've seen him perform 215 times in my life. And this wasn't the longest stretch that I hadn't seen him perform, because there were times in the 70s and 80s and even 90s where there was a couple of years between tours. But certainly from the late 90s until now, until that final tour, he toured over 50 to 100 times a year. So I saw him 5, sometimes 10 times a year, depending on residencies or concerts or things like that. So it had been a while since I hadn't had a regular dose of Elton performing live. And even to see him do it one time, one song, was quite an emotional thrill to see that. And then, what was even more interesting, which plays into today if you've been reading some of the headlines, is that he talked about the film and how much he enjoyed it and how much it brought back memories, and he's looking back nostalgically because it tells the story of his life. In fact, he narrates it in many ways, in that they're using his own voice from interviews that he did for his biography, Me, that came out a few years ago. So he's actually the narrator, and he talks about specific times in his life, and then they show different footage from that. So it's unique in that standpoint. But then he made the announcement, of which he had spoken about just a few times in a few interviews, but it wasn't really reported on very much. But he mentioned how he was suffering from an eye ailment that was causing him to lose some sight in his right eye. And at the time, this was back in October, he made it sound like it was being treated and it was temporary, and the hope and the expectation was that it would clear up. And the story was that he contracted some kind of an infection back in June, in the summer, in France, where he has a home. And now this was October, and they were still hoping that this was going to clear up soon. Well, I don't know if you've read the news, but of late, just a few weeks ago, he again appeared on stage at the opening night of a musical that he has written based on the film A Devil Wears Prada. And when the show, the actual performance of opening night was over, he came on the stage to thank the audience and the cast and everything. And he made an announcement again, which got much more coverage this time in the mainstream media, even though those of us who follow Elton knew that he at least was suffering from some kind of ailment. But maybe this this announcement made more news because of the severity and the definitiveness of which he made the announcement. From the stage, in talking about the show, he said, you know, I've lost my eyesight, so I wasn't able to see the show, but I can hear it, and it sounds great, and blah, blah, blah. And I think that was a shocking and devastating news for many people who may not even aware that he was suffering from this. But even those of us who knew that he was having some kind of trouble with his eyes, the way he announced it and said it with such definitiveness, I've lost my eyesight, it didn't have that same ring of optimism or of hope. And it sounds as if now it's almost 6 months. I mean, this is December. This happened in June. It's been 6 months. And so it sounds as if this is a lot more serious than he expected, and it hasn't gotten much better as he had expected or hoped. And so that is very scary, to say the least, because, you know, it's sad for anyone to lose their sight. But for someone like Elton John, as an artist, he's a visual artist. He created a visual persona of himself. And he's a huge fan of paintings and art. He's got one of the biggest private photography collections in the world. So he also reacts visually to art, not only his own, but other art. And in fact, as he has said in a recent interview on ABC, Good Morning America, the loss of his eyesight, hopefully it's just temporary, but if it is permanent, it could have an influence or an impact on his ability to write songs because he can't read the lyrics. As many people may know, and as you will learn in this film if you see it, Elton does not write the lyrics to his own songs. He writes the melodies. He is a reactive songwriter. He's worked with Bernie Taupin for almost 60 years, and how they got together, which I thought was common knowledge, but after I've seen some reactions to this film, many people did not know this, but they came together through an ad that they both, in a music newspaper, when they were in their, Elton was 20 and Bernie was 17, and they responded, unknowns. Bernie said, "I can write lyrics, but I can't write music." Elton said, "I can write music, but I can't write lyrics." And a guy named Ray Williams said, "Well, Elton, here, take this envelope of lyrics with you and see if you can write some songs to it." Talk about a star-crossed relationship. But my point is, that's how Elton writes songs. He reads the lyrics. He doesn't write he has at times, in a brief period in his career, written a melody for which lyricists have put lyrics to. But for the most part, whoever he works with, whether it's Bernie Taupin, whether it's been Tim Rice with The Lion King and Aida and other projects and other writers he's written as well, for the most part, he gets the lyrics first, reads them, studies them, reacts to them, and they inspire him to write the melody. And so the way he put it in this interview recently, since he can't read right now, it might affect his ability to write songs because he needs to see the lyrics. Now, perhaps he can change his writing process if this, sadly, is something permanent, because apparently not only has he lost vision in his right eye, but apparently his left eye wasn't all that strong anyway, because I guess he has had glaucoma in his left eye. So he's got a weak-eyed one eye, and then he lost vision in the other one. Which is ironic, because here's a guy that made his trademark wearing glasses, and he used to need prescription glasses. He has had eye surgery about 20 years ago, so he has 20/20, or he had 20/20 vision. The last 20 years, he hasn't really needed to wear glasses. He just likes wearing them. But those are sunglasses. Those are clear frames. But back in his heyday, in the 70s and 80s, and even into the early 90s, and through the 90s, those were prescription glasses. He really wore glasses. So it's kind of a sad irony that a guy who made his career wearing glasses is now having eyesight problems that could be serious and could be permanent, which would be devastating not only for him as an artist, but as a father. You know, one of the reasons that he retired from touring in 2023 and has taken a step back from performing and doing all the touring is because he wants to spend time with his teenage sons. He wants to watch them and experience them growing up. His son Zachary on Christmas Day will be 14. His son Elijah will be 12 in January. The whole idea was to leave the road and to slow down his life and to be able to spend time watching his kids grow up. And what a sad irony is if he wasn't able to see them anymore. So this is potential. It's devastating news on many fronts, professionally as well as personally. Now, the good news is that in this film, Elton John, It's Never Too Late. There is a new song called Never Too Late that plays over the credits. It was co-written with Brandi Carlile, the singer, Grammy-winning singer and songwriter, who has become a very close friend of Elton's. And Bernie Taupin and also the producer Andrew Watt are also credited. But it sounds as if it was really a Brandi Carlile lyric that she presented to Elton. And this was written about a year ago. This is before this whole eye issue happened. And rumors have been that they wrote this song as well as a whole album's worth about a year ago. In fact, this album was supposed to be released sometime earlier this year, and then it was pushed back to be maybe some released now. But now it seems like this album, which was the two of them, kind of a partner, a collaboration between Elton and Brandi Carlile, both writing as well as singing together on a full album. Now that might be up in the air it sounds like it was done. It was recorded. It was finished. The songs were written. It was waiting to be released. But now, given this eye issue, clearly it's hard for him to get around. He has performed a few times, as I said. He performed in New York. He's performed on a TV special for Disney. But he does need to be helped on and off to walk. And, you know, he's only singing when he's as appeared in concert at charity events or things like that since this eye issue. He's only been singing songs that he really knows because he can't read the teleprompter. He does use a teleprompter. You don't see it. It's not right by the speakers in the front of the stage where a lot of times teleprompters are. His is actually built into the piano and it reflects up. So he can look into the piano and see the words. So when he's been performing now with this eye issue, he's only been performing songs like Your Song or Tiny Dancer or Rocket Man because he knows those. He knows those lyrics so well. But I think one of the reasons why this new album might be delayed, in fact, indefinitely maybe, or at least for the foreseeable future, is that I'm sure that the plan was to somehow promote it, not do a whole tour. He doesn't want a tour, but he may have done selected shows, maybe one in New York and one in L.A. and one in London or something, and he had performed songs from the album. Well, he probably, since there are new songs, would have needed the teleprompter in the piano to read the lyrics of the new songs. Well, if he can't read those songs, can't read the lyrics, he can't perform them. So not only will this eyesight, you know, affect him in terms of writing in the future because he can't read the lyrics and react to them, but it also might have an impact on him being able to perform in any major way publicly because he can't read the lyrics to a concert worth of songs anymore. Now you might say, well, Jim, I mean, why? What are you saying? I mean, you know, Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder, you know, they're blind and they write songs. Right, but they write the music and the lyrics. The lyrics are in their head, so they're writing them as well. Ray Charles wrote his own lyrics. Stevie Wonder writes his own lyrics as well as the music. As I said before, Elton is a reactive singer. He needs to see those words. Now, as I said, maybe they can record the lyrics, you know, written, you know, spoken, and he can put them in headphones and hear them over and over, and maybe he'll have to change his writing process, see if he can do it. But right now, I think things are up in the air, sadly, for him because of his health, and it's very sad. So this film really now takes on even a more important context. Because if his eyesight situation is permanent and is serious, it could really affect his future as a recording artist and as a performer. And he is 77 years old. So this film now even takes on greater subtext as it looks back at his career dating back to the beginning and just a couple of years ago, doing his final U.S. concert tour show. It even becomes now more powerful and more emotionally charged because as you watch this, you realize this could be the end. We keep our fingers crossed that it isn't, that this is a temporary thing, but it just adds greater context and subtext and drama to an already powerfully emotional film. And I have to say, from my standpoint, personally, not only was it, as I said before, almost like looking at my own kind of photo album and my own travel log, since I remember so many of these moments in Elton's early career in the 70s, even as a little kid, and now certainly over the last year or 2 years of his of that last tour, having gone to many of the shows spotlighted, especially the final show of the Dodger Stadium show in November of 2022. I was there for that one as well, right in the front, right in front of him. So that was emotionally to see that. But something happens early on in the film which floored me, and which will make this film very special for me for the rest of my life. I'm in the theater in New York watching this film. Never saw it before. And there's some, as I said, there's there it transitions from archival footage from the 70s and recounting his early life and his career, and then goes back into the present, preparing for this the final show at Dodger Stadium, and going into that and backstage and in his dressing room and with his kids and things like that. So there's this one scene where he's in his dressing room getting made up, and he's talking, and he's got all, as you'd expect, he's a big collector of everything. And so in his dressing room on the dressing table, while his makeup is being done in his hair, there's all these little bobbleheads and all these little trinkets all set up. It travels, it used to travel with him wherever he went. And then he's talking about his kids, and there's a pic, they show this, this framed picture of his kids. And then they show this other framed photo of him with his two sons, Zachary and Elijah. Well, I almost jumped out of my chair because it was this close up of this framed photo that's sitting on his dressing room table that he can see every show, I assume. And it was a photo that I took in, I believe it was February of 2018. I went to see Elton during his Million Dollar Piano Tour residency at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. I was sitting in the front, and in a rare occasion, he brought his two sons out. Now, at this time, his sons were about 8 and 6. And so they were, you know, relatively, you know, small little kids. And they hadn't really been on stage with him before. And you even wonder how much they really were able, even at that young age, to really absorb, like, who their father is. And why are all these people cheering for him, and why is he wearing this this pink sequin jacket, and where does he go all the time, and you know, where, you know, he said he's going to work, but you know, who is, you know, I don't know, at the young age of 8 and 6, do you really comprehend that your father is Elton John? Do you know what that means? And so he brought them out because I think he wanted to share this with them, to create this memory for them, to share in his work. It was kind of like bring your kids to work day for Elton, although only the difference here is in front of 4,000 people are screaming and yelling and being a frenzy for seeing him in person. And there was a moment where his younger son Elijah is sitting on the bench with him. Elton is playing, and Elijah is sitting on the bench with Elton, and his older brother Zachary is sitting right next to them, behind them. And while Elton has his head down playing, Elijah turns to his brother, Zachary. They you could see the eye contact between them, and they both have these big smiles on their face, like, wow, isn't this cool? And you could see the love between them. You could see the pride they have for their dad. You could see the excitement they have for the situation that they're in. It may have been one of the first realizations of who they are and who he is and what all this is and what their reality really is as people. They're little kids, and I don't know how much at that age they can really grasp, but I think this was one of the first times they could really see, wow, this is something special, isn't it? And you could just see that moment between the boys that they're sharing. And then you see Elton right there as well going about. So it's a great, it's just a great photo. It captures such a great moment. Elton is hard at work showing off for his boys, and they are clearly appreciating and are proud of their dad and excited to be there and sharing this brotherly moment as well as this family moment. And I click this picture right at that second. I saw it happening. And when I got home and saw this picture, I said, wow. Not only is this a great picture just for Elton and his kids, but it was a great picture for any father. A father would want to have this picture, as well as the kids would want to have this picture to remember that time when we were on stage with Dad, you know, 30 years from now. So I sent it to him. I never expected to get anything back. But he sent me a letter back. And in the letter, he said, wow, thanks for this picture. It's a keeper. Well, until I saw this film, I never knew just how much of a keeper it was. To the point that he frames it and travels with it. And the fact that they would put it in this film. And there's a good 2 or 3 or 4 second shot of it. So if you see this film, Elton John, Never Too Late, on Disney Plus, debuting on December 13th, early on in the film, you'll see him in his dressing room, sitting in the chair, getting his makeup done. And you will see a picture in a silver frame of Elton with his two sons and his two sons turning and looking at each other while Elton's wearing a pink jacket and playing the piano. Well, that was the picture I took. So, I mean, when this, I had no idea it was in the film. When it popped up on the big screen, I jumped. I couldn't believe it. And so obviously there was a tear in my eye after that and every time before it, because and then I saw it again, the film was shown again on a big screen just for a week or so in the Chicago area at the movie theater. I went to see it again. And once again, once that picture popped up, it's just a special picture, regardless of it being Elton John and his sons. It's a special picture of a father and his sons. And to know that I took this picture and it means something to Elton's family. Wow. As far as a fan goes, I don't know how much cooler of an experience that can be. So to have seen that little, the fact that they would, that David Furnish would include that picture in the film, I was just blown away, and I thank him for that. And I'm so grateful that Elton loves that picture so much. He travels with it and has it with him. And I'm so grateful that his boys will have that picture as a memory of their father for the rest of their lives. So yeah, this is, it's a special film. If you're a diehard fan, you'll love this documentary. But even if you're a casual fan, or even if you're not even that big of a fan, but you say, what's all the commotion about Elton John? Well, this film does an excellent job of showing you what the commotion is all about. It's a very detailed, comprehensive, emotional, fun, exciting retelling of a special moment in Elton's career and in the music world, as well as some very intimate and personal moments in his present life. And I have to tell you, I was at the concert, this final show at Dodger Stadium on November 20th, 2022. And I was sitting right in the front, but you know, you're outside. It's a big, it's out in the stadium. Even though you're close, you're not that close. But I have to tell you, the final song, the final moment of this documentary is Elton on stage at Dodger Stadium with this sequined robe that looks like a Dodgers uniform, similar to the Dodger sequin uniform that he wore in 1975, so everything ties together. He's wearing the sequin LA Dodgers baseball cap, just like he wore in 1975, to tie it all in. He did these two historic shows at Dodger Stadium in October of 1975. Two sold-out shows, 55,000 people at each. The first solo artist to ever play Dodger Stadium and sell it out like that. And not a band. Bands had played it, but not a solo artist. And there is a distinction there. And so once again, how popular he was. Wasn't Led Zeppelin with, you know, Jimmy Page or Robert Plant or the Beatles, you know, they were there to see one person, not one of the four or the combined group, to see one person. 110,000 people. It was historic at that time. It remains historic today. But I have to say, the last scene of this film is a real tight close-up. As close as I was that night, wasn't this close. A tight close-up of Elton's face singing Your Song. It's a beautiful version. But it's so close and so tight that you could see his eyes, even through his glasses. And you could see there's awe and there is emotion in his eyes, and he's singing this very emotional song that was his first hit and perhaps still his biggest hit of all time. And you could see the emotion hitting him that he's back at Dodger Stadium. He's 75. He last played this when he was 27, and it's still sold out. There's still excitement. And here he is today, as bigger as ever, still singing this song and still having all these people come out. So his own personal pride, his own personal history, you could see the emotion flooding in and you could see his eyes welling up and he's fighting to fight back, I think, the emotion during the song. It's one of his best performances of the song because you see the real emotion and the feeling of this person, not this superstar, but of this person who is experiencing something very special, very personal, and very emotional in front of 55,000 people. It's a quite an emotional and powerful moment to end the film on. And so I would just urge you to see this new documentary, Elton John, Never Too Late, on Disney Plus, debuting this week on December 13th. And you can watch it as many times as you want. But I hope you come away with a deeper appreciation for Elton John's music, for his career, and for his artistry. Because it's all on display and it's presented in a very powerful and loving way. If you're a diehard fan, you're going to laugh and you're going to cry. If you're a casual fan, I even think you're going to say, wow. And that word pretty much sums up Elton John's life and Elton John's career. Wow. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 446. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.